Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, August 6th, 2019. And we'll begin with the front page of the commercial news. Our first story is entitled District 118 to Look at Spending Plan. This is by Carol Rome. Danville. Danville District 118 school board members Wednesday night will review a proposed spending plan for the district for the 2019-2020 school year. In addition, board members will consider approving placing the tentative budget on public display for 30 days. The proposed budget shows $80.1 million in expenditures for the year, which is about $4.3 million more than last year, but only $75.9 million in revenue, which is about $3.6 million more in revenue than the year before. Approximately $1.975 million of the expenses are assigned dollars for capital improvements to be made to school buildings throughout the district. The tentative plan projects a beginning fund balance of $29.9 million and an ending fund balance of $25.6 million. The proposed budget, however, currently shows a deficit of $4.25 million. Although the budget is unbalanced, a deficit reduction plan is not required at this time. Things could change, Business Director Heather Smith said Monday. I have a month to look over things. Smith expects the revenue projections could change because she has yet to hear from the state about how much transportation reimbursement and state aid the district should receive in the new school year. Our expenses are greater than our revenue because there have been increases in costs, Smith explained. We're spending reserves on the capital improvement projects. The $1.975 million in assigned projects will show as expenditures, she said. It could change at any time because they're buildings and grounds projects. Some of the projects and money amounts that have been earmarked include $650,000 for the Danville High School pool room, $350,000 to replace the roof at Edison Elementary School, $75,000 for tuck pointing at Mead Park Elementary School, $550,000 to replace the boiler and chiller at Southwest Elementary School, and $275,000 to paint a gym at an undisclosed school. Also on Wednesday, board members performed the following. 1. Heard an update on the district's Career and Technical Education, or CTE, programs at Northridge Middle School and DHS. We're looking at college and careers and partnerships with Vermilion Advantage and DACC, Assistant Superintendent for Elementary Education John Hart said. In the new school year, Northridge students will have the opportunity to learn basic computer applications and keyboarding techniques, take skills personality assessments, and learn about digital citizenship and cyber safety. CTE offerings at this high school will include 10 dual enrollment courses, 5 business, 3 computer, and 2 industrial, in which DHS students will earn high school and DACC college credit simultaneously. 20 sections of industrial tech courses encompassing geometry and construction and welding, 16 computer courses, 13 business courses, and 3 workforce development courses that include the Work Experience and Career Exploration Program and Global Careers and Professions Internship Course. Hart said the industrial tech area of the high school was renovated during the summer to accommodate the new industrial tech offerings. The facility at Danville High School has been updated with a fresh coat of paint and new equipment, he said. Also, we'll be introduced to new administrators Kenneth D. Bailey Academy Principal Mitzi Campbell, Northeast Elementary Magnet School Principal Justin Thorlton, and Garfield Elementary School Principal Nicole Zayer. Hart said the board is expected to approve new assistant principals for Mark Denman Elementary School and Southview Upper Elementary School. The position at Mark Denman is new, while the South View position would fill a vacancy left when Scott Vogel was named as DHS Assistant Principal. Also, to hear an update on summer school. Summer school took place at Mark Denman Elementary School, South View Upper Elementary School, and Kenneth D. Bailey Academy. The kindergarten through high school students that attended received the benefit of multiple programs, including participating in skill reinforcement, credit acquisition, or credit recovery. At Mark Denman Elementary School, 252 students showed interest in attending summer school, 205 students attended at least one day, and the overall attendance percentage was 73%, and of the 205 students in attendance, 70% showed growth. At Southview Upper Elementary, 102 students were invited to attend summer school. 75 students attended at least one day. The overall attendance percentage was 81%. Of the 75 students, 52 were enrolled in credit recovery, and the remainder worked on skill acquisition. And of the 52 students enrolled in credit recovery, 52% passed on to the next grade level. At Kenneth D. Bailey Academy, 86 students enrolled at KDBA for summer school. The attendance rate was 81%, and 121 credits were earned. Also, consider paying an annual membership fee of $3,500 to the Large Unit District Association. Consider waiving the Board of Education extracurricular participation fee for clubs and athletics that perform a community service activity. Groups would earn the community service hours rather than individual students, Hart said. And finally, to hear an update on Northeast technology readiness. And our next story, also from the front page of the Commercial News, is entitled, Report, Extreme Heat May Hurt Farms. This is by Christopher Waljasper from the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting. Champaign. As many as 9 states could see heat indexes above 100 degrees for more than a quarter of the year by 2036, according to a new report. The impact of climate change will push the number of days with heat indexes above 100 degrees across the Midwest from an average of 6 days to as many as 30 days. Some top agricultural states could see nearly 2 months worth of days where temperatures and humidity combine to create dangerous conditions for outdoor workers, according to a new report by the Union of Concerned Scientists. The report, entitled Killer Heat in the United States, looked at 18 different climate models to project what heat indexes could be by mid-century and late century. Researchers looked at future impacts across several scenarios, including if people took no action now to reduce heat-trapping emissions, as well as taking slow or rapid actions. The report shows that with no action, nearly a third of America's urban areas will face an average of 30 days of heat index above 105 degrees. This heat is predicted to impact more than 90 million people, 100 times more people than see those conditions today. Rachel Licker, senior climate scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, said they chose to look at heat index because, unlike other volatile weather patterns like hurricanes, wildfires, or tornadoes, extreme heat will impact everyone. She said that extreme heat presents a unique challenge for rural Americans as well. Extreme heat exacerbates a lot of pre-existing health conditions, she said. Rural residents also oftentimes have disproportionately low access to health care facilities because of the distance to get them to the hospital. 1 in 5 rural hospitals are at risk of closing, according to health care consulting firm Navigant. More than 100 have closed since 2010, according to the Rural Health Research Program and the University of North Carolina. Between 1999 and 2010, the Centers for Disease Control estimate extreme heat was the cause of 7,415 deaths, making it the leading cause of weather-related death. While southern states experience higher temperatures, heat-related death is actually more prevalent in northern parts of the country. Greater swings in temperature and higher humidity mean temperatures as low as 80 degrees could lead to heat-related illness. The projections are especially troubling for the agriculture industry, which is so dependent upon the weather. Nearly 20% of heat-related deaths reported to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration are in agriculture, fishing, forestry, and hunting sectors. Especially at risk are migrant farm workers who spend much of the day in direct sunlight without regular breaks or access to air conditioning. Access to consistent medical care for health insurance is also a challenge for these workers, as they only spend a few weeks in each location. Heat-related deaths and illness for farm workers may actually be higher, as undocumented workers are less likely to report symptoms, according to a 2014 study published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. Andrew Knepp, head of environmental strategy and industry activation at Bayer Crop Science, said his organization has been thinking about how rising temperatures will impact agricultural workers for years. "We employ a lot of seasonal work," he said. "They have to do this work out in the fields, and that's weather independent." He said that because of the risks, Bayer offers on-site medical care and monitoring to prevent heat-related illness. But for smaller farm operations, providing that level of medical care for employees would be cost prohibitive. In 2015, more than half of farmers got their insurance through either their spouse's employer or other off-farm work, according to a survey from USDA's Economic Research Service. Knepp said that while corn is naturally a tropical plant, the potential for extended high temperatures could cause real problems for farmers in the future. "It is naturally tolerant to high heat, but as it gets too extreme, we know that has tremendous yield impacts in terms of the amount of stress it puts on the corn plant. It increases demand for water. All these things conspire to cause problems in a corn crop," he said. Knepp said Bayer and other seed companies are already anticipating higher temperatures and offering corn, soybean, and other crop hybrids to farmers that are better able to withstand heat stress. "As we see growing regions shift, we have been able to develop products that farmers can plant," said Knepp. We have to anticipate what's going to happen 10 years from now. New seed hybrids may allow farmers to grow a successful crop, but it will come at a cost. New hybrids come with premium price tags. Spending on seed purchases has already increased by 78.6% from 2007 to 2017, according to the USDA Census of Agriculture. Some farmers don't want to wait for a technology innovation that will adapt to a future impacted by climate change. They are implementing innovations on their farms to prevent it. Brian Corkill, a farmer in Henry County, Illinois, said he wants his farm to be part of the climate change solution. "Technology is important," he said, "but we still have to put in place those practices on the ground to help mitigate problems in the future." Corkill plants cover crops on all 1,300 acres of his farm, as well as other conservation practices that keep carbon in the soil and reduce runoff and excess fertilizer and chemical use. "We spend a lot of time trying to do things to benefit the soil and the environment in general," he said. "Lots of waterways, buffer strips, cover crops, a couple acres of pollinator plots for bees and butterflies and things like that." Lecker said the business implications of extreme heat could be felt across the food system. "It's so insidious that it's likely to affect so many economic sectors, including agriculture," she said. "These are bottom lines that are going to be hit." She points to livestock producers who will need to invest more into buildings and spend more to keep animals cool. "A lot of days with high heat index values and large heat stress conditions will have adverse consequences for dairy cattle, said Licker. The fields themselves may be contributing to the problem. Corn and soybeans sweat during July and August, adding humidity to the air and exacerbating extreme heat events across the Midwest, not just where the crops are planted. And that's if there's moisture in the soil for the plants to absorb. The increase in extreme heat could lead to a scarcity in water. Farmers irrigated 58 million acres, a little more than 14.5% of total cropland in 2017, according to the USDA. There are a lot of irrigated crops out there, and as we see increased heat, there may be an increased desire to set up irrigation, said Knapp. We're going to have to be a whole lot more efficient with how we utilize and manage water. The Union of Concerned Scientists report offered a few prescriptions for staving off the drastic heat predicted to hit within the next two decades. The report recommends the U.S. adopt low-carbon fuel sources for both vehicles and energy generation, implement policies that incentivize renewable resource use, and help developing nations transition away from heavy carbon consumption in order to slow the effects of climate change. Licker pointed out that mid-century estimates are not that far away. We're not just talking about a couple of generations away. We're talking about changes now, she said. There's a lot we can do now to ensure we are heading in the right direction. And now we turn to the obituaries for Vermilion County for Tuesday, August 6th, 2019. And the first is for Cheryl Sen. Cheryl Genesee Sen, 78, of Hubston, Illinois, passed away at 8:54 a.m. Sunday, August 4th, 2019, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Thursday, August 8th, at Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main in Hubston. The funeral service will follow the visitation and will begin at noon Thursday at the funeral home. Burial will follow in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Kennecuck County Park, 22296-A, Henning Road, Danville, Illinois, 61834. Cynthia Woodard. Cynthia C. Hawkins Woodard, 59, went to be with our Lord and Savior on July 31, 2019. A celebration of life will commence at noon Thursday, August 8, 2019, at Leakin Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Officiating will be Minister Jimmy Davis. Interment will be at Spring Hill Cemetery. Charles McLean. Charles Alvin McLean, 87, of Tilton, passed away Friday, August 2, 2019, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 6th, at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. The service will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, August 7th, at Kruger Cone Pape, with Pastor Kevin Ziegler officiating. Honor guard by American Legion Post 210. Burial will follow at Greenwood Cemetery. Janet Boyle. Janet Christine Boyle, 71, of Perrysville, passed away at 7:06 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Friday, August 2, 2019, at her residence. A memorial service will be at a later date at Perrysville United Methodist Church with Reverend Ken Green officiating. The family asks that contributions be made to the Park Vermilion Animal Shelter. Deanna Randalls. Deanna M. Randalls, 81, of Covington, Indiana, and formerly of Newburgh, Indiana, passed away Sunday, August 4th, 2019, in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Per Deanna's wishes, she will be cremated and no services will be held. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Covington is in charge of arrangements. Memorials can be made in her name to the Fountain County Animal Shelter or the Shelter or Humane Society of your choice. Robert Warren Fink. Robert, or Bob Warren Fink, 86, passed away at 1:28 a.m., July 27, 2019, at his home in rural Oakwood, Illinois. A celebration of life will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 10th, at St. James United Methodist Church, 504 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Visitation will be from noon to 1 p.m. August 10th at the church. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center is assisting with arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to the Oakwood Community Education Foundation, care of First Farmers Bank and Trust, at P.O. Box 159, Oakwood, Illinois, in Bob's memory. Sue Ann Freeman. Sue Ann Freeman, 61, of Champaign, died at 1:45 a.m. Saturday, August 3, 2019, at Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System in Danville. Memorial services for the U.S. Air Force veteran will be at 10 a.m. Thursday at VA Catholic Chapel, 1900 East Main Street in Danville. Father Robert Hoffman will officiate. Wart Vet Funeral Services at 3 South Hodge in Tilton is in charge of arrangements. Diana Nelson. Diana Nelson, 70, of Danville, died at 9:57 a.m. Friday, August 2nd, at North Logan Healthcare Center. Wart Vet Funeral Services in Tilton is in charge of arrangements. And now we have a story from the News Gazette entitled Alderman Rolls Dice on New Casino Site. This is by Tracy Crane. Danville. Nearly a week after the deadline to submit proposals came and went, one alderman is calling for a new timetable and a potential new site for Danville's casino. Steve Foster, who represents Ward 7, has placed on tonight's Danville City Council agenda two resolutions. One that would change the developer selection process, and another that would allow for more time to turn in proposals. The city needs to have a discussion, said Foster, one of Danville's longest-serving aldermen. Foster said he wants to give more time to a group that's trying to assemble a proposal that would put a casino in downtown Danville, as well as any other developers who might be interested in that location, rather than the preferred 42-acre site adjacent to the Lynch Road exit along Interstate 74. That undeveloped, shovel-ready site is next to the state border with Indiana, the target population for casino customers, according to past marketing studies. Other advantages of the I-74 site: it also wouldn't require assembling parcels from various owners, and it's located near several hotels. Those were among the reasons it was presented as the preferred site soon after Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a gambling expansion bill in early July that includes a casino license for Danville. Foster, however, argues that it's nonsense that it needs to be near the interstate and near the interstate exit. He indicated that one group interested in a downtown location includes Craig and Kim Campbell, former Danville bankers who now do business in the Chicago area. The people who are trying to do it downtown have shown me a lot of things, he added. It would revitalize our whole downtown. Foster said he has no personal stake in the matter, but firmly believes a downtown site would be best for the city in the long run. I've got not one penny of interest. I'm not involved in this, he said. I don't care who does it. I want it done downtown. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr., Vermilion Advantage CEO Vicky Haugen, and developer Dave Cocagne are spearheading the process, presented and presented the Lynch Road site to the city council in July as the preferred location. They've said the steering committee would consider a development proposal at a different location only if it were shovel-ready due to the tight timeline imposed by the state. Foster said he believes those interested in developing a casino downtown submitted a proposal by the July 31st deadline, but still have details they are working out. They just need more time to get it done, he said. They don't have all their information together. It also gives all the other people a chance to consider the downtown. Local officials have said any new casino would require at least 20 to 25 acres of land. When asked specifically where a casino could fit downtown, Foster indicated it could go on the north or south side of the Vermilion River, just east of the Memorial Bridge, possibly incorporating the old National Bank property, Town Center, the Brazee Tower, and the David S. Palmer Arena. Danville's downtown is about 7 miles from the Indiana border, roughly a 10-minute drive, and there are two hotels in the downtown area. The city must submit to the Illinois Gaming Board its development proposal, including an agreement with a developer, a plan that's ready to execute, and approval from the city council, all by the end of October. Foster said he wants all 14 aldermen to be more involved in the review and selection process, rather than leaving the decision process up to the steering committee, which includes Williams, Haugen, Alderman Mike Pure, Corporation Councilor Dave Wesner, Acting Police Chief Chris Yates, Vermilion Advantage Business Development Director Tanisha Shade Spain, and two businessmen, Gardner Peck of Danville Metal Stamping and Jerry Connolly of Venture Mechanical. All 14 council members should have input and know what's going on, Foster said. Why would we let such a momentous decision be made by such a small group of people? And finally, we have a few items from the community briefs section to share. Danville, neighbors to meet. Holiday Hills Neighborhood Association plans a night out at 6 p.m. today at 1668 Skyline. All are welcome. And a lunch is scheduled. The Chris Healthy Aging Center at 309 North Franklin plans a seniors luncheon at noon on Wednesday. Tori Brigham, CSBG Family Advocate, East Central Illinois Area Agency on Aging, will share an overview of services for seniors. To register or for information, contact Chris Healthy Aging Center at 217-443-2999. Also, the 95th Thornsboro Reunion begins at 12:30 p.m. Sunday at Rotary Point in Kennecuck County Park. Participants should bring a covered dish and something for the cakewalk. Drinks will be furnished. Free rummage. East Park Church of Christ at 1224 East Voorhees Street plans a free rummage sale from 8 a.m. to noon on Saturday. Clothing of all sizes, toys, books, and household items will be available for free to anyone who needs them. And we have music scheduled. The Mitchell's Bluegrass Band will perform from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Kickapoo Park Bistro in Kickapoo State Park. And lastly, Class Together, the Bismarck High School Class of 1954, will celebrate its 65th reunion at 6 p.m. Saturday at Jocko's Pizza Inn, 305 West William Street in Danville. And that's all the time we have for today. This has been the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, August 6th, 2019. Again, my name is Greg, and it's been a pleasure to read for you. I hope you have a great day. Take care.